Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Women Tech Charge. I'm your host, Anne-Marie Imafadon, and today I am joined by multi-award-winning self-care champion and executive director of Glitch UK, Sheyi Akiwowo.
A lot of people come to me and say, oh, you know, I don't go on Twitter anymore, or I don't post much on Instagram because of the fear of abuse. And I'm like, nah! I love being out doing workshops and speaking engagements to talk to young people about reclaiming the online space. And that's what we're all about, championing digital citizenship.
Welcome to the podcast.
Hey!
Thank you for coming. Before we get started properly, can you explain to the listeners what Glitch is?
So Glitch is my oops baby, founded 2.5 years ago after I experienced
oops baby.
My oops baby because I didn't mean to set this up. Like, you know how people are like, I woke up one day and I had
and
a dream.
And that's what oops baby.
But you know, people wake up one day and I woke up and I, you know, I knew I was going to like make poverty history, and I had a vision about setting up Comic Relief or Band-Aid, or like that didn't happen. It started off, I was a elected councillor. So I was one of the youngest black female councillors representing East London, and I was invited to the European Parliament to make a speech. And this was the time that we were like globally discussing the Syrian refugee crisis and like Europe's response to this. And so, kind of very long story short, some of the French National were there. My existence just annoys the far right. And I made an impromptu speech defending a Syrian refugee on the panel. That speech was posted online a few months later. And then it went viral. And then it was posted on a neo-Nazi forum. And I was just like on the receiving end of relentless targeting and harassment. Like, it was unbelievable. And law enforcement were trying their best, but it was not good enough. And so I did a campaign.
Yeah.
And out of anger.
That was Fix the Glitch.
Because I believe that these glitches in the internet is what is stopping the internet and our online platforms from fulfilling its fullest potential. Because I use social media really well. I'm giving myself a pat on the back because I use it really well, really positively, really engagingly. I like my GIF game is strong.
Mm-hmm, it is.
My memes are really good. I'm really funny, and like I don't stalk Idris too much, but I have that. I toe the balance really well.
Questionably.
I know when that photo of I photoshopped my face next to Idris was a bit too much, but I see I tread the line. So I felt like, no, disrespect was real. Like, I just was like, I literally said, and I feel like I can say this to you because you get it, I'm not a mug.
That's literally what I said.
Yeah, Don't mug me off. Yeah, yeah. And then I started this campaign out of anger. Mm-hmm. I remember when Lucrezia invited me onto ITV to talk about what happened.
And who's Lucrezia?
She's an ITV London Tonight presenter.
Oh, okay.
And she invited me on to talk about what happened. And she was like, this is not on. And I was like, it's not on. And so from there, loads of people galvanized around this campaign. And so now Glitch is all about advocacy in the UK, but internationally, working with like the UN and Canada and other governments and quangos, if you like, also with business and tech. But before the oops moment, like the moment where like my whole life changed, I was relatively like a normal young person championing politics.
Young person who at 22 was elected a councillor.
But you know what?
Selected as councillor. At 22 was selected as councillor.
Yeah, but you know what? I didn't know it was politics. I didn't know I was politically charged.
What did you think you'd signed up for?
People call me Moni. Uh-huh. People call me a complainer.
Right.
Obviously, it's now that I can see that I was clocking social injustice and I could see that like I was being treated differently as a black woman. Mm-hmm. You know, it's only now that you can kind of put the language to those experiences.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I didn't understand it was politics. What I do remember very clearly was Charlotte Polius was my friend from school, from Maryland, primary school, secondary school. And I remember seeing her one Friday, lunchtime. It was weird. Like I remember this day like it was yesterday. And she's like, I'll see you at school on Monday. And it's Sunday morning and I'm like, before you even brush your teeth, everyone's checking MSN to see like what's the news.
With the shake. Nudge.
What's the nudge?
Yeah, I remember nudge, yes.
Sorry, I screamed there.
MSN, and then you'd like go on and off so the person could see the notifications and know that you're online. Yes, I remember. Good times.
So, you know, you sign on MSN to see like what popped off on the Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I remember like everyone's statuses being RIP Charlotte. And I was like, who's Charlotte? Like I just could not compute that this was my Charlotte. Charlotte had been stabbed at a house party the night before. And she died. And because Charlotte was so funny, people just thought she was gassing, she was messing about. Mm. But she was literally calling for help. So she died at this, you know, at the scene. And she was stabbed by another girl. And I didn't cry. I was in shock. That was Sunday. I had dance class on a Wednesday. And I remember bursting out into tears. I think it's because dance was my safe space. So I think I felt safe to cry. I didn't cry at school. I remember like all lessons were like... We're off timetable because they wanted to be around for us because it was the first time like someone in our school community had like died, and obviously of knife crime. And I just remember from then asking why Charlotte, like why did that girl pick up a knife, like why does she think that she had to, like I just kept asking why. And it was through the whys that I discovered it was politics. It was people making decisions about my community, like my ends, and like we were not being represented. And that anger again just fueled me to like say, look, I want to be involved in where the decisions are being made.
Yeah.
I did youth politics for a while. Okay. So I did UK Youth Parliament. Mm-hmm. I ran to be young mayor. Mm-hmm. Like I did a UK Youth Council. But I was like, this is all tokenistic stuff. No offense to any young person who's doing it. I think it's a really good training ground and really good understanding of how politics advocacy works.
Yeah.
But I was like, we are not controlling the budget. Mm-hmm. We are not controlling where resources are being allocated. Yep. And it's like, where is that happening? Mm. It was like where the adults were, right? It was the big table. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna go get some experience, which I did. I went out to Brussels to go understand what youth rights were, like go and understand like what is it that my people in Newham don't have, because you don't know what you don't know. So I said, let me go out to explore,
to see the world,
understand. To see, like, to challenge myself on like, why is there a youth minimum wage? Why is that minimum wage the same for all age groups? Like, it was like a real like enlightening moment. While I was in Brussels, I applied to stand for a party as a party candidate.
Okay.
And I got it. I got selected and I campaigned for 9 months. And it was emotional because I was campaigning, knocking on doors that I played, like run out. You know, run out is when you knock on a door and you run away.
Yeah.
And
but this time you stayed there.
But this time I stayed there and I was asking people to vote for me. And I remember seeing like people who I obviously like, they'd see me grow up and stuff, and they were like, I can't believe, like, you know, I'm gonna be like putting a cross by your name at the ballot box. Like, it was an emotional time. My mum's outside at the door, the polling station, and it didn't really hit me what I was doing, but I just knew I had to do it. And then those 4 years were insane. And my final year on the council was when Corey Jr. was shot in the head in my ward. So it had been in Newham. Newham had loads and loads of shootings and stabbings, and CJ had been shot in the head. And I bawled my eyes out. Like, I bawled my eyes out, and I was just like, what are we going to do to make a difference in this area? Like, I just don't understand why somebody who was about to start college, mate, his life has completely, like, gone and vanished. And it was simple things that could have been changed. And so I left those 9 months with a bang. I was like, I'm doing it for CJ. So I didn't care about being diplomatic. I didn't care about, you know, upsetting
people.
You
wanted to change.
I wanted to make a change and be disruptive. And at the same time, the glitch thing happened. And I was like, wow, okay. It's not really about me now. It's about championing and being an advocate for these voices.
I wonder whether there's something about when you're part of the machine or when you're part of those processes and you're part of those meetings and you're part of, is there elements of there are distractions almost as part of the way that things work that mean that being diplomatic or mean that having other priorities or being seen to be a good counsellor and making sure you're doing everything correctly means that you don't end up at the hard edge of this is what needs to be done, people being shot in the head or people being stabbed.
Massively.
Yeah.
100%. Like, I'm from Newham, so no one teaches us diplomacy. You just say how it is. So I think I annoyed a few people.
Oh, in those 3 years anyway.
In the 3 years. Like, especially like the first meeting, I was like, objection. Well, not objection, that's law. But I was like, I'm like voting against this thing. And I was like one of very few people who stood against it. Because, yeah, you do go in so principled and the machine does eat away at you. Mm. And actually, I still face that dilemma now with glitch. Mm-hmm. Having these pure principles. But when you're doing advocacy and you're trying to compromise and like be diplomatic, how do you make sure you're not compromising your morals and your standpoints and your views? And you're trying to push for the greater change, particularly when you're coming from a place where you don't have power. So I'm a Black, Nigerian, British woman from a very working class background, but I have no cultural capital. So what do I leverage? Who do I kind of attach myself to? And all of that stuff. It's a minefield every single day. It all comes down to me when you're the founder and executive director of an organization. And the biggest thing that I love doing is around our training and education.
Yep.
How we can get more people to be active bystanders online. Mm. And especially teaching and educating young women and girls about their online safety.
Okay.
A lot of people come to me and say, oh, you know, I don't go on Twitter anymore, or I don't post much on Instagram because of the fear of abuse. And I'm like, no, don't be silenced. This silence effect is ruined. And that's what we're all about, championing digital citizenship.
Time for a break. Send me a message using the hashtag women take charge, and please subscribe and rate wherever you listen to podcasts. What would you describe yourself as technically? Because this is Women Tech Charge.
Yeah.
You are running a tech non-for-profit.
Yeah.
What's your technical, I don't know, credentials is the wrong word, experience?
I get such imposter syndrome when Glitch gets like, Glitch or I gets like referred to within the tech sphere. Because I'm like, I can't code.
You know you're not dead yet, right?
I have tried doing 2 websites. They've made me cry.
Oh, gosh.
And I have to just remind myself, like, tech is a spectrum, like you've just said.
Yeah.
And I think I'm definitely about the ethics of tech, the ethics of AI, the ethics of policy, mm-hmm. systems, product design, being user-centered.
Yeah.
I think that's my thing. So I don't know if that's human-centered design, which correlates to my background, which is facilitation, right?
Oh, okay.
So I do facilitation around political consultancy, mm-hmm. or engagement.
So what's the chronology? So there was born in the best place on the earth, which is East London.
Mm-hmm.
And then you went to school in East London.
Went to school in East London.
And did you do A-levels?
I did A-levels in East London, George Monex College.
What did you do A-levels in?
Oh my gosh, I did history, law, sociology and politics. Sorry. Okay. Then I did social policy with government at LSE. So that was my first bit
social
into
policy with government, right?
And just like the applied science, if you like, political science, economic theory and all of that stuff.
Yes, okay.
Was hard.
Right.
That was kind of my first into it. And it was doing education policy that opened my eyes to seeing STEM.
The system. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And seeing how, yes, it was. I started blogging on STEM. If you find the blog, it's very embarrassing.
Oh, okay.
I started talking about the importance of women being in STEM.
We could have
partnered on STEMets. So I graduated from LSE, then did some international work experience in Brussels.
That was the Brussels one. Yeah, okay.
I was working for Teach First, supporting the teachers who had who had graduated, completed their 2 years in a very, very hard school, to get them to still stay active within education policy and championing the ending of inequality in education.
Right.
And then it was going freelance and saying, like, how can I use my facilitation skills to get more young people interested in politics and defining their political journey for themselves, rather than having to go or follow our party kind of institutions that we have, like our party politics. So I was ahead of the game. I predicted the failure of our political parties way, way, way before we've seen it happen now. And then I was able to get a job doing some stuff around in the Commonwealth and in the Middle East and North Africa.
Okay.
Getting young people thinking about...
Politically engaged as well.
Yeah, thinking about their communities and these soft skills that they could use to give back. And it's been amazing.
What is the digital equivalent of things you can do to be an active bystander? Let's say top three things.
Top three, help report it to the platform.
Okay.
Reply engaging to the post as originally intended. So if someone's talking about Black Lives Matter, they're not saying that white lives don't matter or Asian lives don't matter. They're just talking about Black Lives that matter. So reply engaging how the post was originally intended.
And that's a ratios thing or not even?
That's not ratios. That's anti-ratios. No, but it could be applied around feminism. If a woman's talking about her experience in dating or her experience like walking down the street, she's not now saying all men. But you know how people go into the mentions and say, but it's not all men. It's like, actually, you're now derailing and gaslighting the person and making them feel bad about an experience that they've shared. So if you reply engaging with the post as originally intended, you help shift it back.
Okay, yeah. So that's two.
That's and two. Then and then I would say... you're making me pick three.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to be cheeky. I'm going to go four because one
the bonus is... The third and the bonus.
Go into their DMs. I mean, don't be annoying.
The person who's being targeted, who's under attack. Yeah.
Like, send them a direct message or send them an encouraging post, because you, like, when you're on the receiving end of floods of abuse.
Yes.
Or someone is stalking you or harassing you, it can feel so isolating. And we are seeing huge impacts of the psychological impact of online harms, right?
Yeah.
With self-harming, suicide rates through the roof. Uh-huh. Like the medical professions have been saying that they've had an increase of cases all linking back to social media.
Okay.
So if we can send an encouraging message to someone to say, like, I've seen you, or great lipstick, or ignore the trolls, but we're not all trolling you, we love you, we support you. That helps kind of provide a light in what can feel like a very dark and gloomy time.
Yeah.
And the fourth one, the bonus one, is just selfishly, we need more data around this. So I really try and encourage people, where possible, to document abuse. And we've got a free resource on Glitch's
website.
Themselves
or of other people?
If you saw me going through something and you're like, how can I help you, sis?
Yeah.
I'd be like, can you please document the abuse? Because I might miss some things, or I might have muted my filters.
Yeah.
So documenting abuse for yourself, but also as an active bystander for somebody else is really helpful. Then we can take that to police and start capturing more data around online harms and abuse.
Yeah.
It's been a thing that I've been trying to push the most with Glitch, to be intersectional. And I'm really glad that we do. Like, we back and support trans women, LGBT, people of colour, and black women. Black women are the most likely to receive online abuse, right?
What was the stat?
Diane Abbott received so much abuse that she skewed the data for when they were looking at just Labour women.
Okay.
Like, she skewed it off the graph. Yeah. That's how much abuse.
But it was something
gets.
Like high 90s or whatever.
And women are, every 30 seconds, a woman is sent an abusive or problematic message on Twitter. Mm. And black women are 84% more likely to face harassment online than white women. And we don't have any data around this. Like, that's the only data we have.
Yeah.
That one, right? And I really want to make this point that, because I do a lot of international development work, and, you know, like you said, I came back from the UN, we're talking about gender equality. And, you know, part of gender equality is trying to improve access to the internet and broadband. And I'm all for it. But my bugbear, mate, like, you can see me now as well. Like, my bugbear is that we are not getting ahead of that. We've not learned from what's happening in the West, where now it's been so embedded in our culture, and the bad behaviours as well have been embedded in our culture.
Yeah.
We are giving villages and towns access to the internet, giving women mobile phones because we think that's empowering them, but not giving them any education around safety, around, like, this potentially could make you more targeted, right? Like, you're told to take photos of your private parts and sell that. Like, there's a huge complexities around it. And I really want to get ahead of the game now. And that's what I personally want to be into. Like, post-glitch, or maybe with glitch, if trustees allow me to, is how we can get ahead. At any time someone is given access to the internet, they already have digital citizenship, like, in them. Mm. Anytime someone's thinking about a tech thing, there's a kind of top 10 tips around digital citizenship that they can think about in their innovation.
Like guns. Kind of, you have to pass the test.
Yeah, like a digital citizenship license.
Yeah.
I like this creativity.
Can we make anti-bot bots? And I wonder whether there's something about almost having glitch bots and then it allows people to sit there and report stuff, or sit there and document stuff, or sit there and think of something nice to say, and it can suggest something nice to say. So there was an event we were part of a couple of years ago where young people made this "don't say that" bot. So it would search through Twitter and look for people saying really mean things and would reply and say, "don't say that." And people would actually either stop, or they'd reply and be like, "no, I didn't mean it. I'm really sorry I said that."
Amazing.
So I wonder whether there's something about, you know, can you build a glitch bot? Can you have a glitch army?
Yeah.
I think there's something about that citizens brigade slash
mob, the not the mob, like a squad,
squad, or like the, what's it, neighborhood watch, almost.
I like that. So it'd be great to see how it can be automated, but we are going to do a respondathon. So we're going to do a campaign to demonstrate how difficult it is to how online space has become so toxic. So we want to show how much abuse women are getting, but we also want to demonstrate how to be an online active bystander. We've called this a respondathon, and we'll be talking about this in the spring around a big, like, 100 volunteers who'll be responding to hate that 10 high profile women have received. But it would be great to see how that could be automated a little bit more.
How do we get tech and AI and all the other trends in the fourth industrial revolution to be in a similar place where we now have the internet, we now have really good ways of disseminating information to a lot of different people, maybe not everyone, because digital exclusion is real. But also if they see something where it's like, oh, I wonder whether tech would make this quicker, or tech would make this better, or make a better experience. It's wishing, and I'm kind of wishing and hoping that that's something that we get to quickly.
This is digital citizenship.
Eventually. Yeah.
This is why I've not called it like tech citizenship or anything. I've tried to make sure that the term that we're using just really shows that anyone can have an opinion, should really have an opinion, and take a stance on their digital rights, privacy, their digital footprint, their digital safety and security, but at the same time understanding their role in creating a positive online experience, a positive digital experience. Because if you do then go on to be a technologist or an AI professor or whatever, that basic fundamental thinking about digital citizenship, rights and responsibilities will be so embedded in you as a value system that we wouldn't keep creating these technologies that are already inherently biased or problematic or have the ills that you've just spoken about.
That's the problem. I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It's the people that have that agency and people that have power and that are creating need to have that embedded in them.
Yes.
And up until now, it's been, you need to have maths embedded in you.
This is it.
And that's the sole qualification for being part of it.
This is it. This is what you do so well. You're so collaborative. You don't hold space. Yeah, you've got an open door policy, particularly to women and Black women, and it's amazing. And I think that in itself role models how we should work in this tech space, where I've been around people who make me feel, no wait, I take that back, because I believe no one can make you feel anything. Right?
Okay.
But I've been around people who I have now felt like, oh my gosh, I need to go away and do a master's at OII, the Oxford of Institute, whatever it's called. I need to go and...
Oxford Internet Institute.
Yeah, I need to go and get a doctorate by my name to be taken seriously. And actually, actually part of it is recognising that lived experience, you know, it's my lived experience that has meant that we have taken this term digital citizenship to a whole nother level. Before, people were talking about it in the terms of like digital literacy and knowing how to code and all of that stuff, which is amazing and we need that. But that kind of ethics point to it, that kind of policy accountability of platforms, of business, of tech, of government, that was missing. And that only comes from somebody who isn't in that sphere.
But I want the both though.
Yes.
So I feel like the digital literacy enables and empowers and brings the digital citizenship to the truest form, or the best form of itself.
100%.
So I feel like because people have been made to feel like that, they aren't even participating. So
right.
The only way to reverse that is to say, fine, I'm going to teach you how to make a website so you know how a website works. And then now you can know, oh, okay, everything's like that on the website. And it's like, yeah. So now can you tell me whether you're okay with the robot making this decision about you know, whether you were the criminal that was there or not, you know, that kind of thing.
I think you're right. And I think it should be our digital right to be taught
exactly
proficiently,
exactly,
like
that's exactly
like the digital space and tech be, and then therefore with rights come responsibilities and it's around this idea of being an online active bystander, around reclaiming our online spaces the way we do the offline spaces. Like I totally believe that, and I think that's, if anyone's listening to this, I would encourage you to really think about like how you can help make the online space safer.
I'm going to end it there. So what have we learnt? Four ways to be an active bystander. We've learnt if you have got the spare time and you can build a bot, build a glitch bot. Thank you very much, Shayi. Yeah,
thank you so much for having me.
This is Women Tech Charge. Subscribe and rate wherever you get your podcasts.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.